It's the one-year anniversary of Japan's great experiment in trying to lift itself from economic lethargy. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe came to power a year ago. His party's Abenomics involves lots of stimulus spending, easy money from the central bank, and then structural reforms. The BBC's Linda Yu is out amongst the shoppers in Tokyo. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we're a year in on Abenomics, and it's certainly worked to get a lot of money sloshing around the Japanese economy, the Nikkei stock index up 58% in a year, it looks like. But would you say it's actually working as a strategy?
Well, I certainly think the first two arrows, cheap money, which is the first arrow, and government spending to replace private spending, which is the second arrow, can have a very immediate short-term effect. What I'm slightly unsure about is what's going to happen when they finally fire the third arrow. So I don't know if you can hear around me, but I'm in Shibuya, which is a big shopping district. And it looks as if it's really busy, lots and lots of people going about. But the truth is, Japan is an aging economy with a shrinking population. There just aren't enough people who have been buying as before. And that makes Abenomics, the third arrow, extremely difficult to achieve quickly.
And for a truly vibrant economy, you have to have businesses taking risks and thinking about innovation and the future. And the jury is still out on whether Abenomics has produced those conditions.
Absolutely. We've had the Tenkan survey come out. It's a very influential survey of large Japanese firms. And the sense is they're more optimistic than they were. But the real figure you should look at is how much firms have actually spent in terms of capital investment. If you have an aging population, demand is going to be low. Demand is low, there's deflation. Firms do not want to invest to produce and hire workers if they're going to serve a shrinking market. And that, in a nutshell, is the problem for Abenomics.
The BBC's Linda Yu watching the Japanese economy in action today in the Shibuya shopping district in Tokyo. The Italian prime minister has called it his country's true nightmare. The German chancellor says it threatens the future of Europe. They're talking about staggeringly high numbers of young people who can't find work. It's a much bigger problem in Europe than in the U.S., where it's also a problem. All this week, Marketplace is putting the spotlight on what we're calling Generation Jobless. We start the series with our European correspondent, Stephen Beard.
The numbers are appalling. The rates of youth unemployment in some European countries have reached horrific levels. 60% in Greece, 74% in parts of southern Spain. And, of course, these are not just statistics. These are real people.
I am a young person. I have to work. I want to work. And I can't.
28-year-old Georgia Siska from Athens has a university degree and speaks three languages. But she cannot find a job. Any job, even waiting at tables.
You applied for hundreds of jobs, would you say?
Yes.
Hundreds?
Yes, hundreds.
And what response did you get?
No response at all.
Georgia lives with her parents and is totally dependent on them. 22-year-old John Koliarakis is a qualified insurance broker, also unemployed, also living at home and feeling guilty.
I feel that I'm not contributing to my family, and this is bad for me, very bad.
John feels he wasted his time getting an education. That feeling is widespread. In Italy, 24-year-old Christina Lupo worked hard for her degree and her master's. Now she's wondering why she bothered.
It's better that a person starts to work early at 18 in a restaurant and don't study. Because person that study, it's really difficult to find a job.
In recent months, European governments have committed to spend $10 billion combating youth joblessness. In Athens, Georgia Siska is not reassured. So bruised is she by her long spell without work, she doesn't feel she'll ever get a secure, well-paid job.
I think that it will be like that forever in Greece, for my generation at least.
At the European desk, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace is not some engulf and devour corporation. It is a nonprofit and it is listener supported. So to keep our coverage strong and relevant, what you could do is make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift in any amount will really help us keep you up to date and well informed wherever you are. Donate at marketplace.org by the end of this year. Thought you'd stop by the post office today with your packages. 6 million of your friends and neighbors will be doing the same thing on this busiest mailing day of the year. Kate Davidson reports.
Zai Richardson is the spokeswoman for the Postal Service. And to hear her talk, you and your 6 million friends are going to have very tired arms from carrying all that stuff.
We are projecting about 607 million pieces of mail to be processed just on today alone.
She says a decade ago, post offices braced for 670 million letters and packages on this busiest day. So while total volume is down at the post office, first-class mail has declined. The headline is the rise of packages. Mark Schumann is president of the Calligraphy Group, a market research firm. He expects package shipments will go up 10% this holiday.
We're estimating that the volume for the holiday season is going to be around the 2.1 billion pieces.
That's Postal Service and private carriers combined. He says shipment weights are lighter than in the past. Perhaps we're purchasing more featherweight trinkets online, like little cell phone cases. So not everyone's arms will be tired after all. I'm Kate Davidson for Marketplace.
And there's a guy in Greenwood, Indiana, who has 86 Christmas trees in his house. How is that different from the lady with 86 cats, you ask? Well, he charges admission and he gives it to charity. And the 52,000 lights on all the trees are enough to heat his house to the point that he's able to shut down his furnace. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.